Fellow Falcoholics, what is up? Welcome to episode 288 of the Falcoholic Live. I'm your host, Kevin Knight. I'm Falcoholic Kevin, joined by a wonderful duo of guests and my co-host, of course, Adnan Ikic, for saying hi once again to Adnan. Welcome back. But
trying to silence us, everyone.
Yeah, it's about me. You know, this show is really just, you know, about my self-aggrandizement. So really, do we even, you know, I just need you guys to be here to attract the viewers, and then I can just have my monologue for 60 minutes about the Falcons. No, actually, that sounds terrible. So that would be the least favorite thing for me, actually, because, you know, part of the fun, I think, is the riffing back and forth. And my original riffer, also joining us tonight, Eric Robinson at @_Eric_Robinson. Eric, welcome back over at ESPN, of course. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm hanging in there. And yeah, the seasons have definitely changed up here in the Northeast. I'm actually starting to miss the cold weather a little bit, to be quite honest with you. Just get so used to it. It's like, yeah. I'm ready for the winter again now.
Yeah, I like the cold. That's my favorite season. I was born in January, so it's like
when you have to change your entire closet to fit the climate. Yep. Up here, you just get used to wearing that all year round for the most part. So,
oh yeah, no, I have two boxes in my closet that switch out like summer and winter clothes, and I just switched out to my summer clothes as of like 2 days ago. So that's when you know when I put the air conditioners in the window and the summer clothes come down. People that live in the South, you know, don't know what I'm talking about. So
they have air conditioners like already in Vegas. It's what a luxury.
Nope, it's definitely interesting having lots of seasons up here in the North. You get used to it, but the South has its you know, advantages. I mean, Waffle House, just the food in general. You know, the North has some good food, but like, I think Southern food is kind of it's tough to beat. It's tough to beat that, right? I know. I'm sorry. Yeah,
I just need one. I just need one. That's all I need.
I also cannot trade these mild winters. I'm not built for the snow. I'm not built for the cold. Like, if it gets a touch below, like 48, I'm like,
48. Yeah. Oh man,
that's balmy. Yeah. Yes, but I know Figgy Factory brought it up. We were joking before the show started about Eddie Goldman being spotted at Falcons practice. We have actual footage of Eddie Goldman in a Falcons uniform at this time, which I don't know that we ever got prior to this. This is the third time he's been in OTAs or camp with the Falcons, and I don't think we ever got footage before. So confirmed, Eddie Goldman is on the football field and is doing drills and stuff. So, you know, maybe this means we might actually see him in training camp or the preseason. You know, he's never made it that far in his first two attempts. So,
you know what's funny? I didn't even really incorporate him into the team's roster and their future plans until you brought it up just now. Like, after going through free agency, going through the draft, I kind of sort of had a genuine, outlook as far as what the defensive line was going to look like, and his name was not really involved. I completely forgot about him until you brought him up.
Yeah, I left him off my roster projection because I was like, I'm not getting fooled again. Like, also, like, when I leave him off, he's definitely going to then be like amazing in training camp and have like a renaissance just to prove me wrong. So it's really best for everyone that I just fell on the sword with that first roster projection. So if only I had that much power, you know, we'd probably have several Super Bowls by now. But guys, we're going to get into some good stuff tonight. We're definitely going to, of course, deliver as much of our season predictions as we get to. As you guys know, last year we ended up splitting it to two episodes, so we may end up doing that again because, of course, you know, we haven't quite gotten Eric's take on the Penix situation. I know you've got quite a take as well on that. And then, you know, Dave as well. Like, we've had like a whirlwind of everyone come through because everybody's got a take on it, obviously. So we'll get to that, and then we will get through as much of the schedule as we can. And then, you know, if we need another episode, we will. I'm sure you guys wouldn't be too upset by that. I certainly never get tired of talking to these great folks. Before we do, real quick, guys,
it's really tough to get Dave on here.
Yeah, well, like, it's rare.
Dave's been on here in, like, since the draft, at least.
More rare than Eddie Goldman, right?
I know, right? Seen Eddie Goldman more times.
there are photos of me in a Falcoholic shirt somewhere, though.
Yes, those do exist. Yes. Yeah,
that's actually not Dave, by the way. It's AI, just like that Eddie Goldman practice footage.
I got seven fingers. That's how you know.
Yep, they all, like, you know, melded together. But guys, real quick, Gonna bring you a word from today's sponsor, BetOnline.ag. Folks, BetOnline is your number one source for the NBA and NHL playoffs this season. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds while the games are being played. Folks, when the game's over, you can head on over to BetOnline's new online casino. You can get in a game of blackjack or poker. That's dangerous for me. I'm a big blackjack guy. Or unwind with one of their over 150 online slots games. You can also head to that website today and to get on in on the action. Whatever action you want, you know, no judgment. I NFL futures are out. I don't recommend it. You know, the Falcons numbers are way too high for my taste. I don't think there's much money to be made there, you know, but whatever you guys want to do, BetOnline's the place to do it. Don't forget to use our promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. All right. Welcoming in our guests first. Eric, I know you've had, I've definitely seen the back and forth on Twitter. We talked a couple times about it, but curious now to get your sort of overall take on the draft. And of course, the man of the hour, the man of the month, it's just generating so many clicks for your employer and NFL Network, Michael Penix Jr., the most talked about Falcons player since Michael Vick. I mean,
yeah, you can say that. What was interesting about it is, you know, when the pick happened, my initial reaction was, I wasn't upset. I wasn't thrown off. It was interesting because if you paid close enough attention, you know, those rumors were kind of sort of circulating going into the draft. And I remember the first thing that came to mind, honestly, was the interview that Bill Belichick had on the Pat McAfee show that week. And he said specifically, because they asked him about, you know, draft intel and stuff like that. He said specifically, you're going to hear rumors throughout the entire draft process. But what you hear between the time frame of 12 to 24 hours prior to the draft is, in all likelihood, there's some truth to it, which is that was a rumor that we heard consistently enough, maybe a day or two before the draft, that they were not only interested in Penix, but they were interested in Penix in the back half of the first, because we kept hearing that they wanted to trade back into the first because they were likely going to target an edge at top 10 and maybe try to get Penix at that point. So putting those things together, I was like, oh, okay. I mean, it's not something far-fetched. I think we all collectively knew that the team was in on Penix at some point, and within the first couple of rounds, but we all were aware the team really liked him a lot. It's different, but I'm okay with it, because if it plays itself out, the most important position in the game is solidified for the next 10 years at least. How many teams can truly say that? You know, you can say that about Patrick Mahomes. You know, maybe you can say that about Lamar and Burrow, or maybe even Josh Allen. But ultimately, you're going to come to the conclusion that not a lot of teams can raise their hands when it comes to that. And when you have the quarterback room solidified for roughly a decade, the conversation changes. The outlook changes. You're at the table now because you have a quarterback. So I looked at that and I relished it. Like, man, no one can really ask us, do you have a quarterback? Remember, we kept getting those questions over the last couple of years. Do you have a quarterback? Do you have a quarterback? Well, you can't ask us that now because
we got two. Yeah, we got two.
I see what they were doing, and I know it's a bit unorthodox, but in actuality, man, there's no, and Kevin's heard me say this plenty of times before, there's no true blueprint to building a team. So, I mean, I've seen a team have a dynasty for 20 years with a sixth rounder at quarterback. I see a team that's putting together a dynasty now that got aggressive to go get their quarterback when they already had one. The Chiefs had to go get Mahomes. They already had Alex Smith. They won 12 games with Alex Smith, but they got aggressive and they went and got their guy. So I get it. It's a lot of people are not going to see the vision, but if it plays out the way that they want it to play out, everybody's going to look back at that and say, hey, you know what? That could be something. That could be, to me, in my opinion, if it plays out that way and if it works that way, that can be one of your latest trends in the league. Watch how many teams are really going to kind of sort of copycat that a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, it's, again, and that's definitely a thing. It's like no team has done it this way before, as in giving out the biggest contract in free agency and then taking a quarterback in the top 10. We've seen versions of this that have involved less intense resources.
Right.
that, you know, obviously the Jordan Love situation seems like it's going to end up panning out for Green Bay. But remember, the first several years of that looked like a mistake for Green Bay because they got to the playoffs and just couldn't get over the hump. Now, maybe that had more to do with Mike McCarthy and all this other stuff than it did, you know, taking Jordan Love or not. But, like, I mean, you know.
If you want to be technical about it, this is what everyone wanted the Falcons to do in 2021, right?
Yes, yes.
Everyone wanted the Falcons to take Justin Fields, even though that they still had an aging quarterback that they were paying almost $40 million and that they couldn't let go. It was literally the same situation people were pushing the Falcons to do 3 years ago. So why be up in arms about it now? That's the thing.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that. And it's, you know, obviously if Penix is a good quarterback, then no one's really going to care, right? Because if you get a good quarterback, then that's kind of no just, then it, any price is worth it to get a top quarterback.
Absolutely.
It's just obviously jarring the way they've gone about it. And I think, jarring for even people on the team, right? I mean, Kirk Cousins was surprised by it. You know, a lot of folks were surprised by it. So we're going to have to watch it play out. And I'm at least, like, the one thing I think everyone can be on the same page about is that it's not boring. It's definitely not boring. It's interesting. And this team over the last 2 years was just so boring, you know? So.
Okay. The draft was what? That Thursday?
Yeah.
Okay. So if they told Kirk on Tuesday that they were going to take Penix, would it have changed anything? Like, that's
right.
What do we
know?
If they told you a few days beforehand, what would your reaction would probably still be the same, Kirk? So
yeah,
it really doesn't matter whether you were told or not, in my opinion. But
no, I mean, it would have needed to have been like when they signed him for it to make a difference, you know? And then it's like, what do you have signed? You know, maybe not. Maybe you would have, maybe you wouldn't have, but they weren't going to risk that, you know?
But if you also look at the pattern, if you look at the timeline, I don't think they were really, you know, all in on Penix until after they had already signed Kirk. Yeah. And then two weeks later, they flew out to Washington to see him. I think when they made that trip, that particular afternoon convinced them like, oh, okay, we should consider this at that point.
Yeah, it definitely evolved over the course of the season. I know some people have sort of taken that to mean that they just didn't have a plan and they just, no, it's like it. When you get a new coaching staff in, like, the scouting department is doing their thing and then the new coaching staff comes in. And, like, by the time the new coaching staff is settled, it's like a week before free agency. So it's like you kind of have to just make a game plan and execute it. And their game plan was, we're going to get a quarterback no matter what. Like, we need to secure a quarterback because that's been what's kept this team from doing anything over the past 2 years. So they went out and got the best one they could. And then later sort of arrived at the idea that they actually loved Michael Penix and they were like, well, we'll hope that we can get him here. And they did. And we'll see if it works out. Obviously it's a bold strategy. And I know Dave, I'm sure you have some takes too on the Penix situation. I know when we had you on the live show, it was definitely a surprise like all of us, but now with a little bit more time to digest, are you sort of coming around on the pick or at least more understanding of the reasoning behind it?
Yeah, and, you know, I think I brought it up briefly on the show, and then I had a chance to collect my thoughts the next day. So my personal run-up to this was kind of funny because I wrote in early April about the trip out to see him, and I believe that the interest was genuine, and I believe they would try to take him, and I thought everything that Zach Robinson said he wanted in a quarterback, which everybody was really excited about, you know, Robinson's sort of checklist for quarterbacks, it was like, not Desmond Ridder, not Marcus Mariota, like the whole way down, you know, the line there. And then the only thing that I didn't get to was, I was like, well, they're not going to take him at 8. You know,
yeah,
I think
that's
I wrote
what I said
that in
too.
The article. Yeah. I was like, yeah, you know, if they move down or whatever. But so that was the surprise. But the night before, I was like, you know what? There's been so much interest in him. I was like, I'll pre-write the article, which is why I had it like 30 seconds after the pick. So like it was here, like I saw it, and then like again it was just so shocking that they actually did it at 8 that I think it threw all of us for a loop. And I think like no matter what, if they traded up to number 1, you would still have Falcons fans today who were like had spun themselves into a positive mindset about this, right? Like it's only a couple first round picks, man, we don't even need those, we're gonna
FDM picks, yeah.
You know, exactly, we got FedEx. But you know, so there is inevitably like we're doing a little bit of that. We all cope to some extent. Look at Broncos fans with Bo Nix, you know, like which is way more indefensible. Like they're talking themselves into it. But I also think there's a legitimate like grappling with the fact that everything that Eric said is correct if Penix is good, right? Yeah. Like, and that's the debate here, and that's what we have to see. But if you did this right and you got a guy who is as good as you think he is, it's the succession plan for an older quarterback. It's, you still got the short-term success with Cousins, and Penix is hopefully your guy, you know, let's say because he's a little bit older, because he's got the injury history, you know, maybe it's 6 to 8 years and not 8 to 12 or whatever, but still having a plan at quarterback over the course of 8 to 10 years is so much further than so many teams get. And I personally think Penix can be that guy. I think he is good enough to be that player. And I think that the Falcons have now given themselves a couple of years of runway to build the offense around Penix the way they want to. They already have the playmakers, but you probably have to reconfigure your line. There might be other guys you want to get, you know, as receiving options for him specifically, versus like Mooney is here for Kirk Cousins, which is great. That's an awesome rapport to have. But so I think the vision of it, it's kind of, you know, it's bold. It's definitely bold. It's spicy, as you like to say, Kevin, you know.
Yep.
But again, I think if the quarterback is good, and I think the quarterback is good, this is going to be one of those situations, like I said earlier on Twitter, even though they're completely dissimilar, people in the post-Julio Jones draft trade talked a lot about the value and how much the Falcons had to give up and how that was not the thing to do in that situation. And it was Julio being great and helping to enable the success that made that conversation go away. It's a very fringe conversation now. And if Penix is good enough in 5 to 10 years, it's going to be the exact same thing. And if he's not, everybody's fired. And we'll be talking about that too. So it's, you know, the stakes here are very clear. And I think it says a lot for Raheem Morris in particular. And I always keep coming back to this, like Terry Fontenot knows he's in trouble if this doesn't work out. Sure. Raheem Morris had to work way too long and way too hard to get his second head coaching opportunity. I think he should have been a head coach a few years back, really. And I'm glad, you know, he's here. But for him to stake this much on Penix tells you there is a level of belief there that's very, very strong. And personally, you know, I have to trust the Robinson-Morris combo maybe more than I did with Smith and the quarterbacks that they tried to do the same thing with less capital. So, you know, long-winded way of saying, I feel like it's going to work out, at least to some extent. I get the logic behind it. Obviously, if it goes south, it's going to go really, really south, but that's nothing new for us. We know.
We're well prepared for that, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things, you know, you have to see how it pans out. And I know Corey's like, oh, now the Falcons are considered the dumb team in the NFL. There's going to be some other team that takes the dumb crown before the season starts. Like, I mean, the only thing that people could talk about right now is the draft. And so, yes, like the Falcons had the most interesting draft of any team. So they're going to get talked about a lot. I mean, I've never tuned into so many different national shows and had the Falcons like talked about every single show. Like it, like, you know, around the NFL, like, you know, I think that's a podcast a lot of people like. It's one of my favorites. You know, there's like strong opinions about the Falcons on this show, like that have never been there before. Like, you know, Dan Hansis hates what they did and thinks it's the worst thing in the world, and Greg Rosenthal thinks it's really smart and like is really intrigued by it. And it's like
it led off First Take.
Mm-hmm.
It led NFL Live.
Yep.
It led Get Up. It was the lead story on Rich Eisen's show. Literally the day after that Friday. And I'm looking around and I'm like, wow, like this is really the only time people are really going to talk about the Falcons when they do something controversial.
Yeah.
I think the real winner of it was Dave, because I mean, I'm sure our clicks have been phenomenal. And, you know,
that's just a genius in him, man. That's all that is.
Yeah. Yeah. And like Dave said, this is either going to work out when the Falcons are going to have their perennial quarterback for, you know, years and years, which is going to be good for views and for, you know, website traffic. You know, if we're all around and kicking by then in a few years. And if it doesn't work out, then we have a new GM search and a possible new coaching search, and that's going to generate clicks as well for that summer. So you know, at the end of the day, Dave just ends up being
the clicks will flow.
I've said this before, I mean, and I'll say it again. Like, I would rather get fewer clicks and have the Falcons do well, especially after the last few years. So, like, maybe I'm a winner either way, but, like, give me the good win.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Give me the good win and 10 people going someplace else because we're too sunshiny. Like,
yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, I after so many years without the playoffs, I'm good on the clicks for now. Like, let's just get some winning football in here. That would be fantastic. But, yeah, I mean, ultimately, I the situation in a weird way reminded me of, like, several years ago, with Malik Willis, where I sort of warned people, it's like, well, look, if you love a quarterback, you take that quarterback high. And I warned people, like, if the Falcons decide they're in love with Malik Willis and think he's a future franchise quarterback, they could take him at 8 and let him sit for a few years. And everyone was like, that's crazy. And I was like, yeah, probably is. Like, he's probably more of a second round pick. And well, and that's Penix is, it's very different prospects. Like, I'm not trying to compare them as prospects, but more as, like, both had high upside, you know, both were considered more like second round kind of caliber, like at least in the draft media. Right. And then, you know, Penix actually does end up going 8 when everybody thought he was going to go in the second round. So it's just kind of funny that that's, you know, the, how that panned out.
So I have for the ones that literally just want to shoot it down and not even have an open mind perspective about it. Like, I have two questions. First, let's just hypothetically say they drafted Drake May. Right? Since everyone wants to pick on Penix's age, let's just say they hypothetically took May and May sits for 2 years. Would it be viewed differently? Second question is, was there, as much as we, I'm pretty sure all of us wanted an edge rusher at 8. It just depended on which one. Was there any edge rusher right now that if you insert him on this roster, it makes them championship material or conference NFC contender? Does it make them a contender? If Latu is on the field, are you looking at the Falcons any different than what you're looking at them now?
I mean, I definitely feel like it signals more of a win now mindset. Obviously you're expecting Latu to contribute more right away. But it's also like, I don't want to reduce it to just the Penix pick, because like, that's where I would agree with people that are like, oh, well, does just one pick change what this team is doing significantly? And it's like, well, probably not. It's more the offseason as a whole, right? Where they didn't really maximize the cap. They went rather future-focused with several of their day two picks as well. You know, the rest of that stuff put together kind of makes me think, okay, this is more of a long-term thing. But I wonder if they had decided to go with Latu, if they would have taken a different strategy otherwise. But
and I hear that, and people are like, yeah, you would kind of sort of view the team a little differently. But I'm like, okay, if my thing is, would you look at that team with Latu? Would you say that they're good enough to beat Detroit? Would you say that they're good enough to beat San Francisco? Would you say that they're good? If you don't think they're good enough to beat those teams, I don't know how much of a difference adding those type of guys were. I know collectively, I know we would feel so much better about the pick if Danielle Hunter was a Falcon. Like, we would have, we would be like, oh, okay, whatever. They took Penix today. Cool. But go ahead, Adam.
I mean, just on the other side of that coin, it's, we don't know how the season's going to play out. Because, I mean, you look at last year, maybe some diehards in Detroit felt it, but I don't think anyone saw the Lions coming a quarter away from the Super Bowl. And I mean, that's a team that was really aided by some of those, you know, young rookies. And I know the Lions had 4 picks in the first 2 rounds, but that's a team that was really helped by some of that day one young talent. But I mean, at the end of the day, we just won't know how the season's going to play out, just because there's so many moving factors and so many moving parts in an NFL season. So, I mean, I guess the answer is TBD.
It is TBD, for sure. Yeah.
That sounds like a segue there for you, Kevin.
Speaking of the season. Yeah, no.
I'm over here like, all right, guys, it's been 30 minutes. I can't.
Yeah, I guess we should get to the topic of the show at some point. But, no, I mean, I do think Latu makes me feel better about the team's competitiveness this year. But, again, we don't really know how much until after we see what Latu is. I mean, if Latu's like TJ Watt, you know, then it's like, okay, Yeah, probably. Right. I mean, yeah, he probably does change it, you know.
And they could yeah. be, they could be, these guys could, I mean, we all felt highly about these three guys anyway. I love Jared yeah. Verse. I think Jared Verse is an NFL-ready guy right now.
Yeah. yeah.
But I think it's also a little telling that none of them went until 15.
Yes. Clearly the NFL did not view these guys as top 10 players because no one what? Was, you know, and that's unusual for edge guys. Typically you see those mm-hmm. edge guys go quick. So,
right. And you can, and I can say that it wasn't just the Falcons that viewed Penix as a top 12 to 13 pick.
Yeah.
If they passed on him, I honestly don't think he was going to make it past Seattle.
Right. It sounds like there were three teams in that range that were
three teams. Yeah.
Trying to
four was a possibility with the Rams, but that's a different story for a different day. But
yeah, I think he was going to be a Raider. If he didn't go to Atlanta at eight, he was going to be a Raider. That's like true. I think Atlanta would have traded down with the Raiders. If they weren't going to take him, that's the hill that I'll die on. And, you know, agreed. I'm sure we'll come back to that. Like, oh, what if they had taken a trade down and, you know, what would happen and all this?
Yeah.
Like, you know, obviously that'll be a topic for years in the future when we know what's going on with Penix and all this. But yeah, but what we can talk about, of course, is this upcoming schedule, because it has been announced. We already knew the Falcons opponents, obviously, but, you know, we now get to see how it's laid out, and starts off pretty tough. For Atlanta, it does finish with an easier sort of run where the Falcons could potentially make up ground in that sort of closing stretch after the bye week. But before we get into it, Dave, I'll go to you first. You know, what do you think about the Falcons getting those four primetime games a year after we got zero?
Apparently the NFL knows something, right? Like that's a good sign that they're going to be good this year, because they didn't think so last year.
Yeah.
They were like, your modest hopes in Desmond Ridder are foolish. Zero primetime games, you know. So they had
were totally
us
right. Yeah, they did. Yeah, they figured it out.
it's astonishing, but I also think it's like, you know, so it's expecting the team to be better, but it's also Raheem Morris, you know, and the Bill Belichick shunning, which of course took up so much oxygen, and Michael Lombardi is never going to shut up about it. So we got to hear that. But that's a huge interest generator. The Penix pick, Cousins going to Atlanta, which is a big move and a relevance play. There's a lot here. Like, I think there are a lot of interesting storylines and now interesting ways that, you know, quarterback situations, coaching staff, etc., interlocks with some of the opponents, which is why you're seeing so many primetime games. So I think it's fair to wonder, did they overdo it? Could we have used maybe one game another year? Sure. But like, I'm actually, aside from being old and being tired the next day, I'm not complaining about, you know, getting some games in front of a national audience. Now, if you ask me in November and things aren't going well, I'll feel very differently. But at the moment, it's kind of exciting, especially all early in the season when our optimism levels are high, when everybody's hopefully healthy. It'll be fun.
Yeah. No, I'm definitely interested in seeing it. I don't love the really late post-game shows, but, you know, I didn't have to do any last year, so maybe, I'm going to have to do more this year. It's fine. That's how it goes. But, yeah, Eric, what do you think about it? Four primetime games for our Falcons. You know, how the times have changed.
Hey, man, you know what? Like we were saying at the beginning of the show, man, the attention is on them now, and it's interesting. Three of those four primetime games are within the first month of the season. Yeah. And one of them is against the defending Super Bowl champs. Like Dave said, the league thinks of the Falcons a certain way, even with Penix in fold here. Like, they look at the Falcons as, hey, this is a team that should play up under the lights. And we'll see. We'll see if this generates anything or if this becomes anything for them. But it's definitely interesting to see the Falcons at this particular point right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited to see how it goes. And, they're definitely gonna, I think the NFL wanted to see within the first month of the season, is this Falcons team like worth a damn? Like, we're gonna find out really fast if this Falcons team can hang with the top teams or not.
Instead of giving us like a middle of the pack primetime game, we're like, yeah, let's see if they can hang with the Chiefs.
Yeah, let's give them Eagles on the road and then Chiefs like back to back, and we're gonna find out real fast if this team can hang.
Yeah, we play well in Philly. I love that.
Typically, tremendous stuff there. But speaking of, you know, scenarios for the Falcons, go ahead.
We have four primetime games. It's probably gonna remain four minimum. I don't think ESPN can flex. Eric, you're the ESPN expert. Can they flex out of games now?
I think they can, but it's late in the season. I don't think they can do it.
It would be the Raiders one, right? That they might flex.
That's the latest ESPN game because the Falcons aren't going to lose any of their first three games. Any of their first three primetime games, they're all within the first 5 weeks. So Raiders is possibly if both teams just aren't, like, you know, worth a damn, or if one of them isn't worth a damn. But there is a possibility that, you know, maybe that Vikings game gets flexed to primetime. Maybe, you know, we don't know if that Washington game could get flexed to primetime. So, I mean, it's four, minimum three for sure. And possibly even five.
Yeah, we could see.
Dallas as well is another one that could get flexed.
Yeah, if that's far enough along for that to happen, then I'm for sure. I'm surprised that's not one of them, honestly, given how they just want Dallas in primetime as much as possible. But yeah, okay, we had a couple from George Costanza before we move into our actual predictions. We got George with the two. Thank you so much, George. He says, just wanted to throw this out there. I have Atlanta going 14-3, and we're going to the Super Bowl because I'm all in on the hype train. It's going to be tough to beat those Chiefs, though, since we have to beat the Zebras as well. Mahomes gets the Elway rules.
14-3.
Yeah. I mean, that's aggressive, George, but, you know, George is an aggressive guy, right? I mean, that he's going to have the spicy takes. Yeah.
Two years ago, George was talking about how the Eagles were going to go to the Super Bowl, and everyone was like, oh, come on. But, you know, he ended up
made that bet. Bad. Yeah. We would have made a lot of money. Yeah.
And he also called the, you know, the Kyle Pitts pick. Yep. So that was
his call, the Kyle Pitts. I think he was in on Bijan Robinson as well. So, I mean, George has a...
Is George on to something? Does George
know
something?
He's got his finger on the pulse. Yeah.
Is George working in... Is George even really his name? That's the thing.
It's not. Yes, it's definitely an alias. Yes. It's a Seinfeld character. Yeah. So, I know it's an alias. Yeah. But
we won't talk about any of the incorrect predictions, but the correct ones hit. The correct ones hit. And hopefully this one's correct.
When you're right, you're right. You know, is... God. And then he also wants to know, Anand, who are the Hawks? Who should the Hawks take at number one? Unfortunately, we're a year late for Wemby.
Alex Starr, easy. I will be so mad if we do not get Alex Starr.
There's only one answer to that.
Yeah, I will. I don't even want to consider the possibility of any other scenario.
No, you shouldn't.
Are they going to do that thing that they did with like Luka Doncic, where they like take him and then they just like trade him and like some kind of stupidity?
Let's not talk about that. We say as Luka Doncic is on my TV in the conference finals,
right? In the conference finals,
yeah, exactly. So you know, obviously that were. I mean, it's not like I think people aren't upset about getting Trey or anything, but you know that was also a spicy move. So hopefully they won't be that spicy anymore, and they'll just.
There's a few. I'm not saying Adnan is, but there's a few that are
just take Sar and just, you know, move on. And you know what? Best part about that, I won't have to watch any more of the NBA draft after the first 5 minutes because the Hawks have won and that's it.
Well, there you go. That would be the perfect live show. We just do the pick and we're done. We're out. It's like, you know, 20 minutes. Yeah.
But for some reason, the NBA decided to make the second round on its own day. And it's like, you guys don't have the pull of football. Like, this is not going to work out.
Yeah, I feel like no one cares about the second round of the NBA draft, right? Like it's not like the second round of the NFL draft.
They might care. They might care this year because of a particular name, but
I'm sure the hype is gonna see LeBron's son go in the first round, though. Absolutely. I think someone's gonna pull this trigger.
I think someone's gonna do that too. But that's a different conversation.
That's a different game. We'll save that for the basketball episode coming in, you know, late June. But yeah, we got to have something to talk about in late June. But yeah, let's kick it off here with the Steelers in week one, Atlanta at home. I believe I wrote up the opening odds article. The Falcons are just 2.5 point home favorites over the Steelers in week one, which might sound low until you realize the Falcons have only beaten the Steelers, I believe, twice in NFL history.
I was surprised that they were the favorites. I'm not even gonna lie.
The Falcons are 2-15-1 against the Steelers all time. So Falcons have had trouble beating the Steelers. That there's no question there. It's also the Arthur Smith revenge game.
Revenge.
Yeah. You know, I don't know who's getting the revenge. We're gonna figure that out in week one. It's either the Falcons getting revenge on Arthur.
Getting revenge. It's us.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. It could be. Well, Arthur Smith is seeking revenge because he got fired, right? I mean, that's
what 7 games 3 years in a row.
I'm not saying it's like justified. I'm just saying it's revenge.
Revenge are you seeking? Are you serious here? The team should be getting revenge. It's like,
well, maybe that's what'll happen. You know, we can spin it however we want, but
it could be. There's definitely some underlining storylines here with, you know, Arthur Smith coming back to Atlanta to face his former team, Raheem Morris also facing going up against the guy that took the job from him the first go around. So there's a chip on Ross's shoulder there. And then you got the whole, you know, Justin Fields coming back to Georgia, possibly if he beats out Russell Wilson, if Russell Wilson is the starter, Russell Wilson is playing against the Falcons in Georgia. If you kind of sort of know Russell Wilson's story, there's some irony to all that. But, you know, with his
future may be in the stands. He was in the stands last time. Russell Wilson.
I'm pretty sure we might see him at some point.
Yep.
But,
yep.
But yeah, there's some storylines with this game. But I'll kick it off. I think the Falcons start the season off 1-0 here and get a win against the Steelers.
I feel like they kind of have to, because they're probably – they don't want to go into this in a situation where they have to win the next two games, because that's going to be hard. It's going to be hard, to say the least. So they kind of have to win this one. But, I mean, it helps that it's on the road. Week one, you know, the Steelers aren't going to get the usual advantage they have on the road because it's week one. And you know, typically you're going to have a strong presence in that home stadium for the Falcons in week one always. And Falcons fans, you know, we will get fooled again. We'll show up in week one and get our feeling or get our hearts broken, but we'll be there. You know, that people are going to be in. So,
and the Steelers usually struggle to start the season as well. So this could definitely be one of those games where they don't look like their normal selves.
Yeah. And you know, it's not the same Steelers team from years ago. The defense is still good, but it's like, I kind of feel like either Russell Wilson is, you know, Arthur Smith's Marcus Mariota, or he's Arthur Smith's Ryan Tannehill. I don't know which one it's going to be yet. That'll be a big question. You know, obviously I feel like Russell Wilson's like closer in terms of talent, you know, to Ryan Tannehill, but you know, I don't know how well that's going to work. Yeah.
He could be very washed up. We'll see. I think I saw a stat last year that I think he took the longest time to pass the ball out of any quarterback. So, I mean, you know, maybe Sean Payton, you know, saw something when he decided to bench. Not that I want to ever give Sean Payton any credit for anything. but, yeah, no, this – I feel like the team will go into that week one with some extra pressure, just knowing what's coming up in weeks two and three, because, you know, you lose week one, it probably won't be – fun conversations during that post game September 22nd after the Chiefs game, where the team's possibly 0-3, and you know, I can imagine how many clicks are post game. Yeah. You know,
I was gonna say there's your clicks there, Dave.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Dave's gonna come out in his Pat Mahomes jersey, you know, for the clicks in that one.
Hey, come on.
Yeah. Speaking of. Well, what are you going with? I'm going to go with the win too. I think they kind of have to win this one. But what do you think, Anna?
Yeah, I'm going with the win. The Steelers, I know a lot's being made about Arthur Smith, but you know, this is for both the Falcons and Steelers. It's a first game under a new offensive coordinator, first game under a new scheme, first game for a new quarterback for each team. So you know, the Falcons won't be at a disadvantage there. Now, the difference is the stability that the great Mike Tomlin, brings to Pittsburgh. But, you know, I feel like the Falcons are just due to beat this team as well. You know, I know they have it. Last time they played the Steelers in week one was 2010, lost in overtime in Pittsburgh. Then they went on a 13-2 run after that. I think the Falcons have, you know, they have the horses here. They have the better quarterback. Man, that feels really surreal to say about, you know, any Falcons matchup. It's been a while since I've been able to say that. I think the Falcons playing at home will come away with a dub here.
Yeah, and Dave, what do you think? You got a dub as well, or?
I do. I think, you know, let's say that Arthur Smith is, you know, a high-end offensive coordinator, and he flamed out in Atlanta for a bunch of reasons, the quarterback, the head coach, et cetera. He still doesn't have Derrick Henry in Pittsburgh. He does not have prime Ryan Tannehill. Like, I feel like there was some lightning in a bottle there. I feel like it's going to take time to figure things out in Pittsburgh. Atlanta's going to be motivated at home, hopefully healthy. And I think they have a good enough team to win this. And also just my sheer will for them to win this is going to make a huge difference, I feel. We also have to remember that they broke the curse against the Colts last year, too.
That's right.
They were 2-15 against the Colts, and they beat the crap out of them. So I'm hoping that we're just going to keep the good times rolling, and they can beat the Steelers, too. So I do have a win.
Yeah. Nope. I think that makes sense. Yeah, we'll move on to week two. I think we got four dubs to start this off. Good stuff there. I think we might see things turn around in week two when the Falcons have to go on the road to play the Eagles, which no matter how good the Eagles are, going into Philly is just one of the hardest places to play. I mean, that there's no question about that. The Eagles have been vulnerable on defense lately, but they've made a change in terms of coaching. They've certainly drafted a lot of secondary help. We'll see how well that unit and that new quasi-new scheme is gelling 2 weeks into the season. But to me, I think you kind of have to chalk this one up as a likely L, just given that the Eagles are a great offense. Even if the defense is like still finding its footing, the Eagles are a great offense, and the Falcons are going to have to – the way for the Falcons to win this one is basically to keep up. And maybe they can with Cousins. You know, we'll see how good that offense is. But I'm going to have them starting with an L. But, Dave, I'll get you an early take on this one. What do you think about that Eagles matchup in week two?
Yeah, so the Eagles, I think, generally start strong. The other thing with the Eagles is the Falcons have beaten them twice in the last 40 years in Philadelphia, 2012 and 1988. I was looking at this the other day. So when you look at that, when you look at the Eagles being, I think, a really good team, whatever weirdness they might have there, there's certainly the potential for the Falcons to be riding high, going into an extremely difficult matchup on the road in week two. I think this is one they lose as well. Could I see them winning it? Yes, but I do think a lot would have to go right for that to happen. And unfortunately, this feels like one they're probably going to lose.
Yeah, no, I think it's a tough one for sure. And Eric, what do you think about that Eagles matchup in week two?
Same. I think the Eagles get the win here, but I do think Atlanta plays them a little competitive. In this particular matchup, it's going to be interesting because the Eagles, from top to bottom on paper, you know, they're in the conversation of having the best roster in the league in terms of just pure talent. But it could be a situation where they're going to need a little bit of time to kind of sort of incorporate everything, because they're having a new play caller this year on offense on both sides of the ball, I believe, along with incorporating Saquon Barkley into the equation as well. So they're going to be good by the end of the year, in my opinion, but I think they're going to be just good enough in week two to beat the Falcons. Remember, Kirk went into Philly last year in week two and almost pulled off a dub against Philly on I believe that was Thursday Night Football, I believe. But yeah, I got the Eagles here.
Yep. And Adnan, what are you thinking about this one?
I wouldn't be shocked if the Falcons came away with a win. I think it'll be incredibly close coming down the stretch, but I think at the end of the day, Philly will just make one play more. They'll be spurred on by the home crowd. This will technically be their second home game, but their first one is in Brazil. It's just Canada's home game. So this will be their first true home opener. They do have a new play caller, Kellen Moore. So the Falcons, coincidentally, will have the first two games against two brand new play callers, and that'll be, you know, nice that they'll be breaking in their own new play caller and their own new coaching staff. But I really, really like the Saquon Barkley signing for Philly. I think he's going to hit the ground running over there. I don't know who's going to cover Dallas Goedert, because right now, you know, Richie Grant is still the starting safety, and/or DeMarco Helams starting strong safety. So, you know, I think that the Eagles will sort of feast over the middle a little bit. Jalen Hurts is still very good at football. As much as I like A.J. Terrell, I don't know if he can keep up with A.J. Brown one-on-one. So I think the Falcons will put up their own points against Philly's very young secondary with Quinion Mitchell and Cooper DeJean, who will be getting a lot of playing time. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think Philly will make a couple more plays and the Pelicans will leave Philly with their heads held high, but they will leave at 1-1.
Yeah, I think so too. And then that leads us, of course, to week three against the Chiefs. It is at home. And the Chiefs, to be fair, they haven't been unbeatable, especially in the regular season. But it's a tough. I mean, it's the Chiefs, right? This is going to be a rock fight sort of game. We know the Chiefs' defense is great. You know, we'll see how their offense is holding up, given all the changes that they're going to be going through. Offensive line, wide receiver. You know, is Rashee Rice going to be playing? I mean, there's a lot of questions.
Rashee Rice is going to be in the league by then. You know,
right? I mean, yeah.
He still has like there's five more questions. Months to make it to the season. So you know, who knows what other dumb shit he could do.
Right, but what do you think about this week three matchup, Adnan? What do you got?
Man, I mean, this is the gold standard of the NFL, right? This is the dynasty. This is the Kansas City Chiefs, and you know it's the same issue that I just brought up with the Eagles, who's going to cover their very good tight end, except on steroids, because Travis Kelce is even better than Dallas Goedert. And I mean, this isn't the very, very high powered electric offense from a few years ago, but this offense is, I think, a bit more balanced, a bit more stable, a good offensive line, a much better defense than what we saw a few years ago. And yeah, I think at the end of the day, Pat Mahomes is going to make all of us lose our minds at least two or three times, because he's going to pull some incredible play out of his ass. And, you know, I think the Falcons will hang tough for a bit, but I think at the end of the day, it'll be too much Pat Mahomes. And I think that defense is very underrated. And I think the Chiefs come away with the dub. And I mean, I hope that we don't panic. Or I hope the fan base doesn't panic if this team's 1-2 after losses to the Eagles and Chiefs, but I know better. I know there's going to be some very hot takes.
Yeah, I mean, at least if it's like, I think if they win week one, everything will be fine. But if they lose week one and then lose weeks two and three, then it'll be catastrophic. So let's hopefully avoid that scenario. But
pop quiz. Who was on the sideline when the Falcons went into Kansas City in 2020? And played a Chiefs team that was a juggernaut, of course, but they only lost by three.
Is that the pick two game?
Yeah, those are him words.
Yeah. That same guy that had the interim tag at that point, late in the season, Falcons are floundering. The season is done, of course. They go into Kansas City. That was a team that was a Kansas City team that was 13-1 at that point. And they only lost by three. Yep. And in that particular game, Patrick Mahomes did not look like himself. That offense itself did not look like itself, honestly. I mean, it's just it was interesting to see how that game played out. And we all walked away from that game collectively like, they lost. But, man, that's pretty damn impressive. I think the same thing is going to happen this time around. I think the Chiefs are going to win. But I think it's going to be one of those games where you walk away and say, hey, you know what? Atlanta stood toe-to-toe with them for four quarters. And they didn't get the win, but you're able to see the potential of what this team could be. So, I'm going to go with Kansas City here, but I think the Falcons give them a hell of a game.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think as long as they...
That was also the Falcons in the last 4 weeks of the season when they're already eliminated, ruining mm-hmm. their draft pick. There's no better team in NFL history. I'm just being facetious here. Although, you know, I'm still a little salty over... you know, some of those games that the team has won over the years. But yeah, Dave, yep. Go ahead.
Yes. But yeah, I mean, yeah, are you on the same page with that one, Dave?
Yeah, I think this is a vintage Falcons stupid shit game. So they're going to do something. They're going to play them so close. It's going to be within reach. And Kirk Cousins is going to rear back to pass. And the spirit of Falcons past is going to enter him. Like Kim McQuilkin's going to show up all of a sudden and infest him. And he's going to throw the worst pass. Something is going to happen in a close game that causes the Falcons to lose this one. And I think it's going to be one of those excellent litmus tests for the fan base. Because you'll be 1-1, hopefully, coming into this. They're going to play arguably the best team in the league, really close. They're going to lose for a dumb reason. I'm calling my shot right now. Come back to this later. And then you'll either be like, wow, they played them so close, or same old Falcons, they blew the game. Like, that's where we're going to be 3 weeks in. It just feels like the right opponent to do it against, because the Chiefs, as good as they are, they have those bizarre games where a team playing well can really put them back on their heels. And I think the Falcons will be that team for sure. So, you know, call it like 30-28, you know, Falcons lose in the final seconds.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you look at the Chiefs, you know, last year they played a ton of one score games, like more than they had played in like many previous years. So that this was a Chiefs team that had to win ugly a lot, and they were good at it. Obviously they didn't have a lot of trouble with that, but this is a Chiefs team that wasn't as dominant last year. So we'll see if they continue to downslope, you know, maybe enough for the Falcons to sneak out a win there. It is in Atlanta. So that's obviously a help. The Chiefs have always played better at home, as do pretty much every team. But, you know, this Chiefs team put up 9 points on the road against the Broncos, you know, last year. So, like, you can beat them on the road. Like, it's possible, mm-hmm. but it's just hard. So I think go in expecting a loss. But I think if the Falcons just hang with the Chiefs and show that this is a team that is in the same breath as the Chiefs, they can hang with the Chiefs. That's what we're looking to see, is like, does this team get embarrassed by the Chiefs, or are they capable of hanging with them? Because if they're capable of hanging with the Chiefs, then the sky's the limit, and that's what we're going to be hoping for. But I ultimately feel like it's inevitable that the Falcons are going into Week 4 against the Saints at home, with this being like a critical. I mean, it's the Saints, so it's always a critical game, but it's like, we got to avoid going 1-3 against the Saints in Week 4. Just seems like this always happens. Like, we have to go beat, you know, we got to beat the demons. We got to beat the devil. And the Devils come into Atlanta in Week 4, and I think they get it done. I think we get a big dub in Week 4 to get this team back to 500, 2-2. But I'm curious, Eric, what do you think about Week 4? You think we get that big dub against the arch rivals?
Man, you know, the fall off for the Saints has to happen at some point, right? I mean, if it didn't really happen, it has to happen at some point. And they're essentially the same team as last year. They're just a little older. Cam Jordan's a little older. They went out and got Chase Young this offseason, but we don't know what Chase Young is really going to look like.
He might not be playing by then, right? I mean,
he may not be playing by then. We don't know. Marshawn Lattimore is coming back. DeMario Davis is a year older now. Tyrann Mathieu's a year older now. That offensive line is beat to hell. Trevor Penning has not panned out. And you still don't know what Derek Carr is going to show up. It has to happen at some point. I think the Falcons get the win here for sure. I think it's a convincing win, as a matter of fact. They may put this one to bed early, in my opinion.
Yeah, I sure hope so. If they could beat up on the Saints, like if they're 1-2 and then they come back home and they beat up on the Saints, everyone will be fine. Everything will be fine. I'd be like, okay, we're all good. It's all good. It's all hunky dory. But yeah, I mean, Dave, do you feel like it's going to be a big dubs in Week 4 as well?
You know, with the Saints, I never know, like, margin of victory, but do I feel fairly confident that this team as constructed can beat the Dennis Allen Saints? Yes, absolutely. I think you're bringing New Orleans here. It's early in the season. I just don't feel like this Saints team is good enough anymore for me to be, and I know what happened at the end of the season, so we don't have to talk about that, but this is not the same caliber of Saints team. Every year we chip away a little bit more at the mystique. And Derek Carr definitely has, you know, one or two costly turnovers to Jesse Bates in him for this one. So I've definitely got the bounce back win here as well.
Yeah. I still can't. I remember that game. I was in Montana skiing and I looked at it at halftime. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, we might pull this out. This looks pretty good. And then I looked at it at the end. I could not believe it. The Falcons didn't score a single other point, and the Saints scored like 30 points after halftime. Like, I was like, what just happened?
That game saved Dennis Allen's job.
I know, yeah.
It was either going to be Dennis Allen or Arthur Smith who got fired after that game. Yep.
Well, hopefully we can really – this will do big damage to the Saints, hopefully, long term. So it'll be worth it. But, yeah, we went – Adnan, you got a big dub here as well?
Let me set the stage for you.
Okay.
The Falcons, you know, according to our predictions right now, go into this game at 1-2 and, you know, with a little bit of desperation. You look at the Saints' schedule, they'll you know, most likely beat the Panthers week one. Week two, they go to Dallas, L. Week three, they play the Eagles, L. So this will be two very desperate 1-2 teams. Oh, and by the way, the Saints go to Kansas City after this game in Atlanta. And then they play host to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So it doesn't get any easier for them. So this is a game that, you know, the Saints probably need to win even more than the Falcons. Or, you know, they'll risk falling completely behind early on in this season, in this division.
Would you classify this as a trap game? Even though it's a big time, even though it's the biggest rivalry between the
two
teams.
I don't think a Saints game can be a trap
game. even with Kansas City on the horizon next week, like the Saints can kind of sort of.
Oh, you mean like
that.
For the Saints? Like
yeah, for the yeah, Saints. Yeah,
maybe
not for us.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah,
no, I don't think so. Just because I think they look at it the same way we look at it. Like this is the game. Like this is the circle game, and then after that, it is what it is. But basically, I'm droning on a little bit. I think the Falcons will win this one decisively. Even though, you know, you just never know with these division games. You just never know with these Falcons-Saints games. It could come down to a field goal. It could come down to, you know, something stupid. But I'm with Eric. I think at some point this team is going to actually have to completely fall off. They've been treading water in being completely mid for the past few years. They are absolutely still in cap hell, and it has affected them because that roster has gotten gradually worse and worse. They're still having to pay Derek Carr. That franchise just hasn't been the same since Sean Payton left and Drew Brees left. It's just they have beaten the Falcons a bit because the Falcons also have had their own struggles. But I think this is the year where the Falcons, you know, take back control of that all-time head-to-head series that right now it's tied, counting the Falcons' playoff victory in 1991. But I have a personal, you know, thing where I never pick against the Falcons when it comes to the Saints. But definitely, like, objectively, I think the Falcons playing at home here, I think they'll still feel good, even though they're 1-2 coming off of a couple of close losses. Meanwhile, I don't think the Saints' losses will be that close. And I think we right the ship a little bit. And, you know, I feel like we come out of this as a fan base saying, you know what, we're in a really good place at 2-2.
Yeah, I agree. I think we could feasibly see the Saints going into this game. I think this is potentially the year where it all falls apart for New Orleans. I know we've been like preying on the downfall every year, but I didn't really think it was going to happen last year. I mean, the last 2 years, I think we've basically all been saying like the Saints team is not going to be that good. Like they're going to be okay. They've still got some pieces, but like they've been bleeding so much and they're just not good enough to be a top team. And they've been very mediocre. I think this might be the year where the bottom actually does fall out. I mean, that the offensive line is in such a bad place for New Orleans. And like, I like Talisi Fuaga, but I mean, you're now relying on a rookie right tackle to come in and immediately play. And he's not just having to play. He's having to replace Ryan Ramczyk, who was like one of the NFL's best right tackles. I mean, this isn't just like replace Caleb McGarry. No offense. Well, maybe a little bit of offense, but Caleb McGarry is like a good, you know, solid right tackle. Ryan Ramczyk is like one of the top, you know, you probably got Lane Johnson at the top, right? And then Ryan Ramczyk is in that second tier of best right tackles, and he's gone potentially. Like he might not play again. So now you have Fuaga who has to then give you what Ryan Ramczyk gave, which is absolute stud play at right tackle. And honestly, the Saints tackle play was like holding that offensive line up for years because all those picks on the interior didn't really pan out. I mean, somehow I think we look back and like, you know, maybe like, I mean, Eric McCoy has been okay. Cesar Ruiz has not been worth that first round pick. And then Andrus Peat, who was looked at as like a bust, is the one who's getting all the money and like free agent contracts now, who I never really thought was great, but he's been okay. And then like, who's playing left tackle? James Hurst just retired, right? So like, I mean, Trevor Penning, like who's playing left tackle? Like, So I think that's Derek Carr can't survive pressure. We know that's his big thing. And like, they don't have the offensive line to back him up now. That they can't necessarily keep him clean. So I think we could see this, like, this could be the 2013 season for the Saints, essentially, like the Falcons 2013 season, where that offensive line is just so bad that it basically sinks the whole team. And you know, I won't be shedding any tears, certainly. So, but let's do one more game, and then we'll pick it up the rest on the next episode. But another divisional matchup, this time the Buccaneers, and this is one of those primetime games. The Falcons, this is the Thursday night football. The Buccaneers come into Atlanta, obviously a critical game because these are the two teams that are expected to be vying for the division. I got a big dub here. I think the Bucs are going to be a solid team. Like, I think they will be like a better version of, like, I think the Bucs are probably going to be like a 9-8 team. I think they're going to be rock solid. They still have receiver talent. Obviously Mike Evans is really good, but like they've had some attrition on defense. You know, I think they've got their own set of issues. They're depending a lot on young players on that offensive line to step up. You know, I do like Graham Barton as a rookie playing center. You know, is he going to hit the ground running right away? He could, but that's a lot to ask of rookie offensive linemen come in. And then, you know, obviously Cody Mock, I think, showed some flashes, but was pretty inconsistent much of last year. So you're having to shuffle around guys and what have you. But yeah, I think the Falcons do get this done in week 5 and get back above 500. But now what do you think about this, this week 5 game?
I respect the Bucs. I have a lot of respect for what they did last year. You know, obviously after Brady's retirement and after, you know, being in such a difficult spot cap-wise and offensive line-wise, they got it done. They signed Baker Mayfield cheap, and, you know, they won the division. And honestly, like, I cannot take that away from them. Like, they played above their heads last year. Now, with that being said, I think Baker comes back down to earth a little bit this season. And this is nothing against him. This is just, you know, I feel like last year was more of a bit of an outlier season for him, as opposed to what we've seen throughout his career. And I think this year he sort of comes back down a little bit. Mike Evans is going to be a Hall of Famer. Like,
he's goated. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. No, like, I hate that Mike Evans came back or re-signed with them, because I'm like, yeah, all right, like, can we get a fucking break? Can we, like, stop playing this dude twice a year? But, you know, I think the Falcons last year were right there with these guys. You know, the Falcons even beat them in Tampa despite three Desmond Ridder fumbles inside the 10 in what was one of the most maddening games of the season. And despite Bijan Robinson, you know, playing one game and having the fantasy football community just ready to, you know, bring out the gallows for Arthur Smith after that Sunday game. And then the Falcons, I think, would have beaten them at home. I think Rashad White had a fumble that just wasn't looked at.
Yeah, that was part of it. Yeah.
And Youngway Koo missed two field goals. So everything just went against the Falcons in both matchups against Tampa Bay last year. And they still, you know, barely split and almost swept. And this year, you know, you don't have Desmond Ridder. This year, Kirk Cousins is a massive upgrade. I don't think Baker will be as good as he was last year. And I think the Falcons in this game, this will be a Thursday night game, which, you know, TNF games are always sort of tricky because you just never know what could happen on such short rest. The Falcons won't have to travel at all. This will be the third game of a three-game homestand. The Bucs will have to travel to Atlanta if that does make any sort of a difference. But I think this will be one of those games where the Falcons sort of win it, you know, and maybe it ends up being like a 7-point win, but it'll only be a 7-point win because Tampa kicked a late consolation field goal. I think the Falcons will win it. You know, we won't really have to stress down the stretch in this game.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I do think this is one where the Falcons could start to build a little momentum here after kind of a really tough start. But yeah, Dave, what do you think about this week 5 matchup?
Yeah, I just saw the comment in the chat that we're all agreeing on these, which does make
yes,
me nervous.
That so is I'm very nerve-wracking. Yeah.
It's not a good thing. It's esteemed Falcoholic alumni Jason Kirk will often post those screenshots after games of like everybody picking the same thing. And
yep.
So hopefully we are exempt from that particular thing, because I'm also going to say that they beat the Buccaneers here. I think the Bucs, unlike the Saints, right? Like the Saints are kind of like the Roman Empire falling apart finally and disappearing into history, and maybe like you've got the eastern part of the Roman Empire over here with the Buccaneers. They're enduring, even if they're in a weakened state. Little history for you guys, I guess. So they're going to be around. They're going to be the team that the Falcons have to get through to win this division. I still think they're a pretty solid team. I am not convinced that, you know, Baker Mayfield is actually as good as he's looked for, you know, basically 12 out of the last 20 games he's played in, which is really what we're talking about. And I think that the roster, despite the real standouts that they have, is not as good as it appears on paper. So to me, this is a Bucs team that can still win 9 or 10 games. They are not as good as the Bucs team the Falcons have had to get through the last couple of years. I think they win this one. Again, any divisional game, I'm not going to say it's easy, but this is a team that the Falcons should be able to get through, especially this week. So I've got them winning this one too and moving to a nice 3-2 record. I'll take that.
Yeah. Yeah. And Eric, what do you got for this one as well?
You know, Adnan brought it up, you know, how they were not that far away last year from sweeping this team. And this was a Bucs team that the second meeting, there was so much hanging in the balance in that particular game. Winner of that game would have gotten first place in the division. And if you look back at the Bucs season last year, that might have been the game that sparked their late season run, which I feel, in my opinion, the way the schedule is setting itself up for the Falcons, that they can kind of sort of mirror that late season run going into the playoffs. And, you know, you look at the Bucs, they were a drive away from beating the Lions and making it to the NFC title game. So that late season run could definitely generate some momentum for anybody. But I think right here in this particular game, I think the Falcons remember that loss at home to the Bucs, and it leaves a little bad taste, especially the defense, because the defense had an opportunity to get a critical stop late, but they gave up a game winning touchdown with under 30 seconds left that cost them the game. But I think they still remember that. I think that there's still a bad taste in their mouth from that game, and they know they can beat the Bucs. They can play with the Bucs. The Bucs are going to be good. Like you've pointed out, Kevin, they're going to be solid. Mike Evans is still going to be Mike Evans. But there's some question marks. There's no Carlton Davis, who I feel was their best corner. Shaq Barrett's out of the equation now. So who's going to be the guy, the lead pass rusher now? Who's going to be the guy to take that mantle? Devin White is in Philly, so there's a void at linebacker now. So there's still some question marks now. They still got the all-pro and Antoine Winfield back there. Of course, he can flip the game at any given moment. But I just think this Falcons team know that they can play with the Bucs. And you guys were right. The Bucs are the benchmark at this point. They know within themselves that they can play with them and that they can beat them. And I think in this particular game, they kind of sort of make a statement on national television, on prime time, under the lights. They make a statement against the Bucs.
Yeah, yeah. So at this point, we all have the Falcons starting 3-2.
Yes.
So we've got some synergy there.
Completely in line with every single game.
Yes, I'm sure we will have some disagreements in this next stretch. I have no doubt about that. But yeah, I mean, with the Bucs, it's like, to me, I think they're probably not going to be able to maintain that level of Baker play. You know, I think even over the course of that whole season, we saw the ups and downs of Baker. And typically the year following a good year for Baker is not as good. You know, we'll see. And honestly, like, Dave Canales was such a big part of that team's offensive success. He leaves, and I don't know that they're just going to be able to just pick it back up again, like, and be like, okay, well, it's fine. Like, the coach that we brought in that got us a miraculous offensive turnaround, he leaves, and we're going to be fine. You know, like, I there's going to be consequences.
I just not realized they play.
Oh yeah, that's what I was about to say. Like, they play a brutal schedule. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say this is another new play caller to open the year for. Like, this is so for their first five games, they're going against guys that are calling plays for their particular team for the very first time.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe a little advantage for the Falcons defense, but the Bucs in particular, like, they play a brutal schedule. They're at the Lions, in week two. They get Philly in week four. They get the Ravens in week seven. The Chiefs in week at the Chiefs in week nine. The 49ers in week 10.
Look, I know, and I know
at the Cowboys.
I know it was week one last year. I get it. It was week one, first game of the season. But just put it in your back pocket. Kirk Cousins threw for 344 and two touchdowns against his Bucs defense last year in the season opener. Yeah. So,
yeah. So the Bucs do have to get through a gauntlet of really good teams that the Falcons don't have to. So the Falcons could win the division just by virtue of the Bucs having to play this brutal schedule, and the Falcons, you know, win 10 games, and the Bucs just are kind of out of it because they've had to play so many good teams. I mean, they got to play the Ravens, they got to play the 49ers, they got to go to Kansas City. You know, I mean, it's rough. So, you know, the Falcons could just be like winners by default because the Bucs just fall out of contention with all these rough teams and end up at like 500 by the time the dust clears. But, you know, we'll have to see how that shakes out. And we're going to give the rest of our predictions, obviously, in part two, which we're going to work on scheduling up probably in a few weeks. But yeah, guys, thanks for hanging out with us. Thanks for tuning into part one of our Falcons 2024 season predictions. Want to thank our guests. First of all, we have Dave Choate, the boss man. He's at the Falcoholic. Dave, anything else you'd like to let people know about before we sign off?
No, just, you know, we're getting closer to training camp. Obviously, there's a lull coming up, so we're talking a lot about the roster, and Terry Fontenot has been kind enough to keep churning the bottom of the roster, so we have something to talk about. So I'd like you to continue to follow us, and I'd like to encourage Terry to continue to make roster moves so that, again, we got something to talk about.
Kevin, just real quick, I think Brandon Bross had a donation.
Yes, yep, I'm gonna get to it. Unfortunately, I don't think we have a ton to report on that, Brandon, but we will definitely touch on that before we sign off. But yeah, thank you very much, Dave. Appreciate you. We also have, of course, Eric Robinson. He's at @_Eric_Robinson on the Twitters. Also doing a work over there at ESPN. Eric, anything else you'd like to share before we sign off?
As always, man, I'm plugging the Falcoholic. That's the one-stop shop that you need to go to for everything Falcons content. Please, by all means, as Dave pointed out, it's the time of the year where content is it's a little tough to come by at this point. So you need some continuity. You need some familiarity. That's where the Falcoholic lies.
Yep, absolutely. And, of course, my co-host, he is Adnan Ekic at Say Which Way. Adnan, anything you're working on that you'd like to let the people know about?
My Falcons rest breakdown article went out after the schedule. If you haven't checked that out, check it out. Where I look and talk about the schedule a bit more in depth. And the other thing I will, you know, I'll probably make this plug later on as well, but, you know, the Falcoholic, us at training camp this year, there was the news that fans will not be allowed in training camp this year because of construction. Now some people are using that as a conspiracy theory to say, oh, they want to hide the quarterback controversy, but, you know, there is no quarterback controversy.
There's no controversy.
But yeah, if the Falcons don't blacklist us because of our takes, then, you know, Kevin and I will, and Gina will all be there, and we will bring you, you know, direct, comprehensive frontline coverage, and, you know, it'll all be going into Dave's pockets because, you know, it'll generate the clicks.
Yeah, get those sweet, sweet clicks. Yeah, we, you know, obviously, I think if they were going to hide the quarterbacks, they should have done it last year. I don't think there's any point to hide the quarterbacks now. Yeah. So
if you guys notice in literally every clip that they put out there with some type of pass being thrown, like the quarterback is seen.
Yeah.
See that,
yeah.
Right?
No, like, it's like all, it's absolutely focused. Yeah. Absolutely focused on the quarterback. So, yeah, no, I don't think they're trying to hide the quarterbacks. I think we could cross that conspiracy theory off the list. But yeah, guys, do you want to get to Brandon's donation? I know you're asking for thoughts on Dalen Baldwin and OJ Hillier. I know absolutely nothing about them. I know Dalen Baldwin is big, allegedly. I think he's like 6'2", 220, so he's a bigger receiver. Ran a 4.71 at the combine. That's not great for an NFL wide receiver, but, you know, we'll have to see Obviously, big body though. Yeah.
They're camp bodies.
Yeah, that's, pretty much.
This is the time of the year where they bring them in.
Yeah, hey. So we'll see if anything pans out. But
never forget Auden Tate.
Training, yeah, those first 2 days of Auden Tate, that was lit, yeah.
Man, he was wide receiver one for 2 days, man. It was amazing.
It was fantastic.
He was elite.
Then he started running drills, and I'm like,
oh, that's why nobody signed. Like,
I'm like recording. I'm looking back at the recording. I'm like, is this in slow motion?
Is that a tight end or like what? Even Tucker Fisk is out running him. By the way, yeah, RIP Tucker Fisk. You know, was released today as well. So
that one catch lives in the archives of Atlanta Falcons training camp footage. Man, that one catch for Auden Tate, it made him elite for at least 10 minutes, at least.
Hey, I'll never forget those 2 days of Felipe Franks at training camp. I feel like we're sort of to blame for some of that Felipe Franks hype.
Oh my God.
Because we're posting videos and people are like, hey, we got a tight end over here.
Funny.
Oh, look at this guy. He had a great, like, couple, like, honestly, he did well. And then in the preseason, he just couldn't catch anything. So
it's funny you mentioned, because it's still burned in my mind in a close game at Tampa. We're drawing up deep post routes for Felipe Franks 1-on-1 against Antoine Winfield. Like, it's still burned in. Like, why are we doing this to ourselves?
I'm still surprised he hasn't signed with Pittsburgh yet. So
I went out of my way to ask.
Give it time.
I asked Arthur Smith specifically about Felipe Franks. I've never seen him happier to answer a question than he did about Felipe Franks.
You're the Pittsburgh Falcons now.
Yep, that's true.
Might as well be.
One of these guys might be a guy, because every year there's a Brandon Harvey. Ever since Brandon Harvey, that's my original go-to guy. Like, he was really good for like two preseason games, and I was like, man, Brandon Harvey. And I've been getting burned by Brandon Harvey's successors ever since. So,
yep, it'll be Isaiah Wooden this year.
It might be. Wooden is pretty good. I like Wooden too.
Yeah, this year's Jared Bernhardt.
Yep, yep. No, yeah. Casey Washington apparently though is getting all the targets. So, you know, we'll I think, you know, Casey Washington's the one that actually pans out. I think Isaiah Wooden is going to be really exciting.
I called him diet caffeine free Cooper Kupp. Like, the Falcons are clearly thinking that, like, this guy is going to be like the extreme light version of, you know, that archetype in Zach Robinson's offense.
And what's so weird about it, and it didn't even phase me until afterwards. The measurables against Puka are so comparable.
Yeah.
Like, literally.
Yeah.
They're so comparable. And I know people are going to look at that and say, oh, he's the Puka. I'm not going that route, but it's like, it's, I guess it's that type of receiver.
Just want a guy to play that role. He's not going to be Puka Nakua. He's going to just play that role.
But why can't he be? Why can't we be happy?
Why not? Yeah, why can't? Why can't we have a 1,400-yard rookie that is drafted on day three?
Nobody thought Puka would be Puka.
Yeah, that's true. You know, he proved all the haters wrong. So,
I mean,
I'm the one who's I'm drafting Casey Washington in the fifth round of my rookie draft. You know, so I have faith. But
I mean, Brendan Rice was still there, and I'm like,
I don't know what happened with Brendan Rice. I still don't understand that. Yeah, I mean, clearly they like Casey Washington. He was shining bright at rookie minicamp. So far, so good. He's looking good so far.
Yeah.
Yeah. But guys, thank you so much for tuning in with us. We appreciate everyone. We appreciate BetOnline for sponsoring the show. We got George Costanza with the two saying, you guys are sleeping on how good Captain Kirk is going to be over what we saw with Mitter. Oh God, he's dropping the Mitter line again. I thought we were past the Mitter stuff, but you know, it's going to follow on forever. But
it doesn't take much to be an upgrade from what we saw.
That's true. Okay. Very true. Yeah.
I will also say at camp, despite the fact that some other publications were pushing this Desmond Ridder is actually very good agenda, I never fell for it.
Nope. Never. Not once. I still have that Photoshop I'm just waiting for the right moment to drop it. But
I was getting a lot of criticism for being overly negative about Desmond Ridder in the Falcons' last training camp. Yep. And it turns out I was right.
He's right.
You're welcome, Dave.
Yep. And George is thinking we're going to be 3-1 going into week 5. Rise up. I mean, I certainly hope that's the case, George. I certainly hope so. We could all use a little optimism and the team being better than expected for a change. But Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Please like, subscribe. Please leave that 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice. And of course, check out the Patreon. Check out the channel memberships if you're interested in getting some exclusive perks, getting access to the Patreon Fantasy Leagues. We're going to be firing those up, obviously, over the next couple months as we get closer to training camp. No Wednesday show next week because I will be on vacation, but we'll be back. We'll have some recorded shows. I'll have Bryce Lewis joining the show. So one of those will be that. And I'm going to have Mark Raimondi, the new ESPN reporter, joining shortly as well. So you can get to know him a little bit. Lots of good stuff coming as we get through the slow season here and get towards training camp, guys. Thank you so much once again for joining us here on the Falcoholic Live. I'm Kevin Knight at Falcoholic Kevin. For Anon, for Eric, and for Dave, thank you guys so much for joining us tonight. We will see you next time. Have a great night, folks.